You said, my health improves as I age. You've said that your health is better now than it was in your 40s.
Definitely. I want that trajectory for everybody. I'm talking about some quite controversial subjects.
Yeah, we've gone up against big pharma and big marketing and big brands and yeah. all of the money.
The trillion-dollar VC industry.
Yeah, and you've gone, do you know what? Don't worry about it.
I have no agenda and I just want to age well and I just want to share that information. That is pure and simple my agenda.
Everything's a mess, but it's okay because stick with Liz. She's going to tell you what to do. So the answer is... Hello and welcome to Own Your Health with me, Katie Brindle. And today I have an esteemed total girl crush slash colleague because Liz has been in the market for the most fantastic of length of time. And yet you wouldn't know it looking at you. You look absolutely fresh as a daisy off a 3-week tour of her incredible blockbusting best-selling, number one best-selling Indeed. Now book,
yep.
Which we're going to talk about today. Thank you, Liz, for joining
Thank
us today.
You.
I just want to say, because Liz, you are literally just a tiny, tiny fraction older than me, although you look literally about 25. And I first came across you when I was in my late teens and I read every single one of your books.
Really?
I didn't know that. Yeah, I did. And I hung off your every word. You literally influenced me before an influencer.
Amazing.
You were an influencer before they even existed. And once again, I've read this book and hung off every word. It's the most fantastic read. If you haven't already bought this book, I really, really recommend it. It is a no-nonsense, punch-pulling, grounded, authoritative book all about how to manage the aging process. There's not a word of anti-aging. It is pro-female,
pro-aging.
Yeah. Wisdom, I feel like it's drawn upon every single word that you wrote all those years ago and then sort of raised the bar incredibly. So thank you so much for this brilliant book.
Thank you.
And I think one thing just to say before we start is that you've just done 3 weeks of press coverage on this, where you've just been here, there and everywhere. And
everywhere.
You literally look like you've just been on holiday.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. I'm about to go on holiday. I think I do need one.
Well, so it just goes to show that if you follow the advice in this book, then frankly, you're going to do really well because here is the living proof that you could do
and
this.
I've just had an hour and a half in traffic.
Exactly. So, really stressful morning. And actually, there's a couple of things before we get started on this, which I found really brilliant. Here you go. You said, my health improves as I age. You've said that your health is better now than it was in your 40s.
Definitely.
And me too.
And I'm in my 60s. I mean, this weekend I'm having my birthday. I'll be 63.
Yeah.
And I'm my strongest, my fittest, my healthiest, my happiest than any decade.
Mm.
Definitely my 40s, my 50s. And, you know, I want that trajectory for everybody, that not to think that aging has to be this inevitable decline. We can continue upwards. I want to be sitting here, Katie, in 10 years when I'm in my 70s, going, yeah, my 60s were okay, a bit rubbish, really. I feel so much better in my 70s. You know, I want that upward curve. So I wanted to put all the science in there because I'm talking about some quite controversial subjects.
Yeah, which we'll get onto in a minute. Like SPF.
Oh, my gosh. And so much. And new cutting edge science, introducing mitochondria.
Yes.
Talking about cellular aging, you know, talking about the importance of light, daylight, light, water, grounding, all of those things. So I wanted to explain it in a really clear but evidence-based way so that any medic or skeptic could pick it up and go, ooh, actually, you know, the science is there, all the references are there. But then simply, if you don't want to read all of that, go to the end of each section and there's your little to-do list.
Yeah.
It's like, just read this and just do this.
Yeah.
And it's easy.
It is easy and it's positive because I think just the fact that your book is titled How To as opposed to Anti, which is, so what I love about that is that my message is always a celebration of the female and a positive reinforcement of all the things that we should and could be doing to actually enter into the second half of our life, which in Chinese medicine is called the second spring. Only women are eligible for this because we have this power of rejuvenation and we go through these three archetypes. So we start as the maiden, we go to the mother, and we then post-menopause become matriarch. And just like you're saying, there's like little old ladies as the example of aging on the internet. It's like, well, there are not really any examples of leading matriarchal figures in society because she wasn't allowed to exist. And we are blazing that trail. We are going to be the first ones sort of
showing
what can be done. So what are the simple basic things that anyone can do? They don't have to spend any money because you talk about HBOTs and ozones and supplements.
We don't have to do any of that.
What would you say for free?
So really simple, that it basically comes down to three fundamental principles. Because we're bringing it back to our mitochondria.
Yeah.
So mitochondria, these little organelles in our cells that give us energy, they control DNA repair, they control our aging. So if we look after our mitochondria, really simply, they look after us.
Right.
That's it, bottom line. So what do they need? They need good light, so daylight, getting outside first thing in the morning or just opening a window. It can be as simple as that, seriously. We need to stay hydrated, but we look at water in the bigger sense of what can actually water do for us, not just tap water, which is kind of like ultra processed water. It's
it's white bread. I think it's sliced bread.
It is. You know, the sliced bread, yes, you know, we all used to eat it back in the day and not really think about it. But now I think many more of us are perhaps buying, you know, sourdough or spelt bread or whatever, on the understanding that it's probably better for us. And I think, you know, we need to reassess our relationship with water, how much we drink, the type that we drink. Let's look at structured water, which is super interesting. And then the element of being outside in nature and the grounding, the earth's energy, the vibration. I deliberately called that chapter or that section energy.
Yeah.
I'm really talking about vibrational energy, but I thought I didn't want to sound a bit too woo. But that is kind of really what it's all about.
Yeah.
Because we are cellular energetic beings. Mm. And it's how do we reconnect with that in a really simple way? It could just be take your shoes and socks off and stand outside.
Which you do on your socials.
I do all the time. Yeah. Every day. I did this morning.
Yeah. And so...
Even on pavement.
It works even
yeah, concrete. So anything concrete is conductive. So basically you're tapping into the earth's negative ions, the energetic charge from the earth, which we've become so separated from. You know, our ancestors didn't wear shoes. You know, they were just barefoot and they were just appreciating all this negative, these ions, which are anti-inflammatory and they lower cortisol. And you just feel literally more grounded. You know, you feel that your shoulders go down and and your cells respond to that energetic current. And so you can do it on grass, you can do it on soil, on rock, on sand, on concrete, on stone. Doesn't work so well on tarmac or anything that's got kind of rubbery bits or plasticizers in it. But something that's a basic natural raw material, concrete, you know, sand and cement, absolutely will conduct. Mm-hmm. And even if you can't put your feet on the ground, you could put your hands on a tree.
Yeah,
particularly a damp tree, because if the grass is dewy in the morning, that's great. It's cold, but it's even more conductive. So yes, go out and, you know, even just touching bushes and leaves and plants, because they're conducting the energy up through the ground, and we can get that energy transference too.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I talk about as far as the one non-negotiable health practice, the one distilled down to absolutely everything, is the early morning walk. Which I've been banging on about.
I've seen you do that on your Instagram.
Oh, goodness.
And about how the difference when you're very early.
Yes.
Compared to going out at, say, 10 o'clock.
Yes. I mean, obviously...
And there is a real reason for that.
Yes. Let's talk. So obviously, full stop movement is, of course, good for you. And you talk about that because you talk about exercise as well. So any movement is beneficial. But it was so gorgeous to read you talking about the early morning walk, because it's something which I talk about all the time and people kind of think it's a bit weird because not many people do it. Mm. I'm in Hyde Park every day and there's runners, yes.
Yeah.
There's dog walkers. I am also a dog walker, but even without a dog, I go for a walk.
Yeah.
And then the occasional person walking to work, you can see they're there. But no, not many people actually just walking.
Yeah.
And I think we've got a trend going on here. I reckon by this time next year, never mind 10 years, we'll be sat again. You see, we stopped about. So you talk about this. We'll talk about the time in a second, but the early morning walk is something that is non-negotiable in your book. You're talking
Certainly,
about it right at the beginning.
Yeah, early morning daylight. So I start, the whole section at the beginning is light.
Light, yeah.
Because that is the first fundamental thing. And when you look at, going back to what our cells need, our mitochondria, they are fueled by light. Mm. And you can almost look at light, sunlight, daylight, almost like a nutrient, because it provides energy for the body, just in the same way as we eat food to get energy and to create a healthy body.
So Bonchage have used that as their advertising campaign.
Have they?
The missing nutrient.
It is, light.
All over London buses.
Okay, great. Well,
they're flogging
not wrong.
Red light.
Yeah. Well, you know, red light, yes, you can get it in masks and panels and all of that, but we actually get it free first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
And that's why the early morning is important, because light isn't static. It's not the same throughout the day. It shifts. Mm. It's got a huge invisible spectrum that we don't see. So first thing in the morning, when we get daybreak, before the sun even is over the horizon, before you can see it, you get that kind of early morning light and that the sun is coming. And when we have that light, there's no UV. What we're getting is we're getting red light and near infrared light. And we're getting all the different wavelengths that start to appear. So we're getting red and green and blue and yellow and cyan and purple. And they all have slightly different wavelengths. You've got near, mid and far infrared. And they all send different signals to our mitochondria. Now, our mitochondria are regulating our circadian rhythm, this 24-hour clock that we run on. So, and that controls our hormone release. It controls our sleep-wake cycles. So getting early morning light sounds bizarre, but you will sleep better at night because it's like a timer clock. It switches on the program to make melatonin later in the day so we sleep better. Mm. So simply by getting that early morning light, you are guaranteed a better night's sleep than if you weren't exposed to it. Now, you're doing the great thing because you're going outside. Mm. If you can't go outside, just open a window.
Yeah.
You know, my mantra, and you need to say this to your boy as well because I say it to mine, is sky before screen. That's such a simple rule. You know, everybody does it. You know, we wake up, we've got our phone that's waking us up.
Yeah.
Just get an alarm clock, a digital non-tick alarm clock. Don't wake up with your phone because you see it and you're instantly drawn into messages. You've got, well, blue light first thing is okay because blue light kind of spikes cortisol and it gets us going. You don't want blue light later in the day,
but
you don't want to be woken up with blue light because also your head then starts going down the rabbit hole of the doom scroll and the news feeds and you haven't even woken up. You haven't even had a chance to get your brain to process things. So get up without your phone and go outside or open a window. Mm. So I have a window in my bathroom and if I can't get outside, I just brush my teeth in front of the window.
Yeah.
Every single day of the year, you don't need sunshine, you need light.
Yeah.
So it's those early light signals. And then the mitochondria, these little organelles in our cells, the highest concentration is in the eyeball. Mm. So they are taking in all these messages. And really interesting, when I was researching the book, particularly for the eyes, the eyes don't just see. The eyes don't have just rods and cones. And this was really interesting research that came out of Oxford not that long ago. So even if you're blind or visually impaired, you still have impact from daylight because our eyes are receptors to these wavelengths that are invisible. Mm. And they start to talk to the brain. They release neurotransmitters. They're producing dopamine later in the day. They're setting up the hormone cascade. You've got the melatonin. You've got insulin regulation. So you've got signals for leptin, which is controlling our appetite. So all sorts of things, you know, weight loss and mood and sleep, all stem from those first few minutes of daylight. Mm. That's why it's crucial. And I just wish I had known that earlier on. I've been talking about getting outside and getting daylight for a few years now, but it was only doing the in-depth research that I realised actually how it was impacting my ageing and my overall health.
Something that you also touched upon in the light chapter was about sunglasses. So this is another free thing that I wanted to just kind of drill into with you because we were sort of teenagers where it's cool to wear shades and you get the shades out and, you know, go on holiday, get your shades out. You know, Tracy Ullman with her sunglasses song, you know, sunglasses. And you kind of think, right, here I am with my shades. I look really cool. And I, up until about sort of 3 years ago, actually thought I just had sensitive eyes. I've got blue eyes, which are apparently more sensitive to the light. And I thought, I've noticed that I was having to wear sunglasses like all the time. And I actively, in my morning walk, thought, this is ridiculous. I didn't know what you just said. Mm. I just knew that I needed to just allow the light to just bathe into my eyes. It was like eye bathing in this early morning sunlight. And whilst it felt not painful, but a little bit sensitive to start with, I could feel it was doing me good.
Yes.
And I could feel there was a sort of healing energy going on in the back of my retina where I was like, I know this is helping me. Now, I didn't go into Western research this. I went into Eastern research, where I always go, where, of course, the masters and the Tibetan eye exercises are always talking about early morning light for health for the eyes. And then I read your book. And now you're talking about the fact that we're wearing sunglasses too often and that they came in the 60s. It's a relatively new thing.
Yes. Well, it's sort of Hollywood adopted them, really. It was, you know, the aviators, the classic Ray-Ban aviators, which were developed for pilots to be able to see. You know, I think it was maybe Second World War because of the glare and they were in these sort of open cockpits. And then it became cool and fashionable. And yeah, it just became, and obviously it's an industry.
Like
ophthalmology in general is an industry and you have to be sold sunglasses or reacting lenses that change with the sunlight. Oh my gosh, that is, you know, if you talk to any quantum biologist or circadian biologist, they would just, you know, have throw up their hands in horror with that. So yes, I think we need to be safe. You mustn't damage the eye. You must never stare at the sun.
No.
You must never subject your eyes to glare. And the rule really is if you have to squint, then you're potentially damaging the eyes. So you need then to be in the shade or to wear a brimmed hat or to have your sunglasses on. But the problem with wearing sunglasses all the time, or even for most of the time when you don't really need them, is that you put that dark lens in front of your eye and your eyes, and more importantly, your brain, thinks it's nighttime. So your circadian rhythm is like your brain's going, hold on a minute, you've just got up, you've given me a little bit of blue light from daylight, so I'm going to release some cortisol and get on with my day. Oh, is it nighttime now? Oh, right, okay, well, stop making that. Let's cut off the leptin signals. Let's cut off the melatonin signal for later in the day. And everything gets disrupted. And then, of course, you've got the issue of sensitivity, that your eyes then just become more and more light phobic because they haven't adapted to being...
Which is what happened to me.
Using the sun. So protect your eyes. Don't have glare. Don't have damage. You know, if you're high altitude, if it's very bright, you've got a lot of reflective surfaces around you, you're out skiing, you know, whatever it is, sailing, then yes, of course, wear good sunglasses. But, you know, it is interesting how your eyes will then adapt. And presumably you can go out now on a cloudy day without sunglasses.
Yes, I try and avoid them, to be honest, and use the squinting technique myself, because I've now found that it's that, as you're saying in the book, light is healing when used correctly. And you are repeatedly saying that, because I think there's probably some naysayers out there going, hang on a minute, you're saying this and you're saying that. You're like, no. We're talking about...
You've got to read the book. You've got to read the nuance, because it's not black and white.
No.
And it's like, you know, sunscreen. And for example, one of the worst things that you could do is be in the sun, exposing your skin, wearing sunglasses.
Yes.
Which, of course, is what we do.
Yes.
And the issue with that is that your brain is telling your skin... It's fine. You don't need to make anti-inflammatory chemicals.
Dark.
You don't need to worry about it because we're indoors and we're about to go to sleep now. Meanwhile, your skin is going, hang on a minute, there's a whole load of UV. I'm just going to go red and try and protect myself because my brain isn't giving me the right signals.
Yeah. So. It's so interesting. And it's interesting because in Chinese medicine, everything ultimately goes back to the organs. OK, so there's five fundamental organs, which is the heart, the lungs, spleen, liver and kidneys. And all of in our medicine, it all ultimately goes back to that. And they all have exterior manifestations on the face. So the liver, which is one of the fundamental organs, opens to the eyes. And in our medicine, the liver is also really responsible for the melatonin production within the skin. Mm-hmm. So it's, you say brain, I say liver, but it's basically so similar thing, that ultimately what you're doing with your eyes is affecting the melatonin production.
Melanin.
Yeah, exactly. Within
it's
the
so
body.
Easy to get them mixed
oh
up.
My God, sorry.
Melatonin is sleepy and calming, and melanin is protective pigment. Although actually it has a greater role than that, but it's best known for pigment.
Both of which, for us, come from the liver.
Okay.
So it's so interesting to see that what we're doing to our eyes ultimately is impacting what's going on within the body's natural functions of protecting itself and sleeping, which is ultimately its ultimate restorative practice. And you talk a lot about sleep, because obviously when you're talking about light, inevitably we're talking about sleep disturbances. And you're talking about uplighting at night, the wrong kind of lights.
The wrong kind. So just as sunlight, which we can talk about later, but daylight, good. Indoor lighting, bad. Mm. Kind of simple. So when you think about it, historically, we have evolved with light. We get up when it gets light. Sun comes up. We can go out. We can work outside in the fields or hunter-gatherer, whatever. Gets dark. We have to stop because we can't see.
Yep.
And we sit around campfires and we chat and then we go to sleep. And then we start again. So we all changed that with the advent of the electric light bulb. Everything suddenly changed. Yes, you had kind of oil lamps and candles, but they were quite dim. But suddenly we could have bright light 24/7. Mm. And it meant that we could carry on working. And again, think of that circadian rhythm. So our light, especially in the winter, when it's dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we start to wind down. We start to kind of think about, the brain is thinking, oh, I'm going to be going to bed soon. Let's change our hormone pattern. Let's, you know, stop the cortisol. We're going to stop working now. We come indoors, put on all the lights. Mm. It's like, oh, okay, right, here we go again. And this is creating inflammation. It's creating stress levels that we have never had before. In addition to disrupting the sleep dark, that the light dark cycle, the spectrum, the wavelength that comes from LED indoor lighting is a shortwave blue light.
Mm.
It's not this lovely broad spectrum light. Even the old fashioned light bulbs, the incandescent light bulbs, were broad spectrum. They were giving off all these different wavelengths that I talked about. When we get single shortwave blue light from LED, it's very low energy. That's because it's only producing one short single wavelength. Our mitochondria really don't like it.
No.
They just go into decline. And unfortunately, all the places where we need our mitochondria to thrive and support us and be healthy, think of intensive care units, hospitals, care homes, schools, nurseries, you know, offices. All of those offices Shops. Where we're working all the time.
Hotels, yeah. But,
you know, where we don't have access to daylight, we are in this mitochondrial deficit and our cells are really paying the price. And I think this is going to be an important public health message going forward, that our indoor lighting is basically the equivalent of ultra-processed food, you know, just as we can come on and talk about tap water. But in trying to create something better, we just need to get out of our own way sometimes with what we invent, because talk about unintended consequences. Mm. This lighting is seriously bad news. Now, there are some benefits that we can do that are easy. I'm not saying you have to strip out all your lighting, because when I was researching this, I was looking at my kitchen thinking, I'm going to have to replace all my downlights.
Oh, I mean, it's literally, this is what's so good though about the book, is that it's not doom and gloom.
It's not, because there is a workaround.
Yeah, there is. So the problem is presented factually, which is kind of what I do. It's like 50% of the solution is understanding the problem. So the situation is, in order to age well, we need to look after the mitochondria.
Yes.
The reality is that modern life has basically inadvertently hammered our mitochondria to the point at which
really
they don't know if they're coming or going. Everything's a mess. But it's okay, because stick with Liz. She's going to tell you what to do. So the answer is,
number one, get more daylight wherever you can.
Yes.
Obviously, get outside, open a window. Even if I'm driving in the car, like coming here today. So, you know, it was quite cold, but I just cracked the window open that much, because the light is not linear. It doesn't come in like this. It'll come in and it'll bounce around. So I'm going to get all that broad spectrum light. So wherever you are, if you can, just keep that window open a little bit during the day, or take daylight breaks. Incandescent light bulbs. So there's a great guy at UCL. He also works at Moorfields. He's a professor of neurophysics and ophthalmology. And his research shows that just one incandescent light bulb on your desk or on your bedside table or wherever, or at your desk at work, will give you enough broad spectrum light rays to benefit your mitochondria.
Wow.
So
you can offset.
You can't repair all of it, but it means that if you're in an environment that you can't control, just having one or two old-fashioned incandescent light bulbs will help. And just be light aware. So in the evening, you know, when the sun goes down, that's our cue to dim the lights.
Yeah.
Have dimmer switches, switch off lights, maybe have a red lamp. If you want to be on your screen, I mean, obviously try not to be, but if you want to be, have some blue blocking glasses, the orange lens glasses that take away the blue glare. Yeah. So,
and you talk about salt lamps, which I honestly love.
Do you have a salt lamp?
Do I have a salt lamp? Oh my God, is the Pope a Catholic? Literally, I've got salt lamps. They're also feng shui'd around the house as well, actually, in my case. So not only do I have the salt lamps, I've got them in the right places. I found these brilliant salt lamps, actually. They're all over the place. They're shaped like angels.
And why do you have them, Ben? Is it for the light, or do you have them for...
The thing is, my entry point into the kind of the aging process and the health process, because also another thing you talk about, which I love, is lifespan and health span. And I love the way you talk about that, because obviously in Chinese medicine, the subject of longevity has been one that has been discussed by emperors for many, many centuries, because, of course, they had power. So when you've got all this power, the one thing you want to do is live a nice long life to keep that power. So they were obsessed with it. And so salt lamps and the use of salt as a feng shui device and also as a healing device has been used for millennia in Chinese medicine. They would put bowls of salt around the place and they could warm it up and do all sorts of things with it. And it's come into the contemporary via the simple salt lamp thing. Now, most of them are quite ugly and unattractive. So I found on Amazon these ones shaped like angels, which are all over the house in the right locations. And the uplighting is key. I've got little sort of uplights all over the place.
Uplighters are good. You know, you can actually offset lighting from screens. So if you want to sit and watch TV in the evening, I do that now wearing blue blockers, but also you can place a light behind the TV screen just to kind of diffuse the lighting and make it not quite so harsh and kind of narrow beam, because it's partly the content that we're stimulating our brain as well. So that's not good when we're trying to wind down.
No.
But also the light signals are keeping us away and suppressing the production of melatonin.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot as well. Back to the concept of the liver having this relationship with the eye, and that the liver as an organ is also an organ which houses the emotions of anger, frustration, resentment. And if we are then watching unbelievably realistic telly, which it is now, your liver doesn't understand the difference between a war taking place in front of you or the fact that you're just watching, I don't know, Lord of the Rings. So yes, you're doing that before bedtime. You're agitating the liver via your relationship to what you're looking at, as well as the light. So it's a bit of a smorgasbord of a nightmare. The best thing you could probably do is switch it all off, put some uplighting on and read your book. And just go to sleep. Or mine.
Yes, I mean, certainly the printed page is good. But also looking at other beneficial vibrations, you know, things like solfeggio frequencies,
yes,
and things that will just be calming to the mind. Even if you have them on in the background, your brain is still listening to them and is tuned into them. And there are different frequencies that can attract different things. They use different frequencies for healing or for energy or for better sleep. And, you know, you'll know this from Eastern medicine, you know, the Tibetan monks chanting and humming.
And healing sounds,
exactly,
which all of which you talk about.
Yeah.
And one of the other interesting things, because obviously in, I think it's chapter 3, you're now talking about the earth element.
Or, yes.
And you were talking a lot about grounding and the earth's frequency. It's all super interesting. And I've just come back from a trip to Hong Kong, which was amazing. And obviously what I love about Hong Kong is it's got so much Eastern medicine going on there and it's sort of all part of the vernacular and it's all sort of normalised. But everyone lives in high-rise blocks. And I was in a hotel where I was promoted, actually. I got a free upgrade all the way up to the 36th floor. They were so proud to tell me.
I would not have enjoyed that.
Nor would I. And I'm sitting there kind of like wobbling around, like up in the sky, thinking, okay, you can't open the window. I've got electric lights everywhere. I've got all sorts of electric devices and Wi-Fis and super Wi-Fis and woofers and God knows what in this room, making sure I can access my phone at breakneck speed. And I'm up in the middle of the air. And then I go down to the ground and there's not a breath of nature anywhere at all because everything has been built. And I was introduced to this really lovely friend of mine and she's in the process of developing this beautiful outside space at this private members club. And they proudly showed me the plastic grass that they've got on the roof. And they were literally going, and this is the most expensive plastic grass money can buy. And I'm literally going like this, going, oh my God, I was getting this, get off it, get off it. And they're like stomping along, going, look, we're using it as a putting green. I'm like, oh my Lord, please don't do that. So the world is going a bit mad. Plastic grass is a whole new area of horror. And I hate to tell her, I've got it in the garden here. I've only just bought this house and it's all being redone. And the plastic grass will be coming up. But right now...
Is it going to go?
Of course it's going to go, but I can't do anything about it yet.
Well, at least you could stand outside on the pavement.
Yeah, well, I go for my morning walk, so I'm all right.
So you will be fine as long as you're wearing your grounding trainers or grounding shoes that connect you.
But
you can buy them that earth you as you're walking, which is good.
Right, so grounding shoes. Now, at the back of the book, you've got
your
resources. It's all there in alphabetical order. It's so brilliant. So what does one do?
So what does one do?
When you're living in a flat, there's flats just there outside in London.
Well, there's plenty
on the ground.
Plenty that you can do. So let's talk first of all about how we can stay grounded.
Yes.
And then we'll talk about perhaps all the EMFs and the other bits of radiation and how we can best combat that. So staying grounded, I travel sometimes with a little grounding mat. So you plug it into a socket. You don't turn the socket on. So you plug it in. So it's using the earth cable.
Wow.
So if you change a plug, you've got the little fuses in there and you've got the earth there, which is usually brown. And that's it's earth. So basically that connects down to the ground. That has an earthing wire. I'm not an electrician, but I know that
it
goes all the way back down to the earth.
That's really good. Thank you, Liz.
It's called earthing.
Yeah.
So you have a little grounding mat. So I have one when I travel. Like you, I was in Abu Dhabi not that long ago in a high-rise hotel room, hermetically sealed, couldn't open it. But I had my grounding mat. I put it under the desk, plugged it in, had it switched off. And at least my feet, I did my work with my feet on that. And people who are very sensitive, people who have significant autoimmune issues, who have a lot of inflammation, do say they feel better for it. It's like sleeping on a grounding sheet. So again, it's just a really simple cotton sheet that's got a metal thread woven through it. And you can put it under your normal sheet on the bed, plug it in, have it switched off. And again, you know, anecdotally, there was a study recently actually done with menopausal women having night sweats who weren't on HRT. And there were 30 subjects and all of them reported significant improvements from sleeping on a grounding sheet.
Goodness, that's good to know.
Which is a super interesting hint.
Yeah.
So that's one thing you can do to stay grounded. And of course, just get out whenever you can and take your shoes and socks off, or at least your shoes off, you know. So what do we do about EMFs? So when I was researching the book, I bought an EMF reader because I wanted to go around. I was a crazy woman going around measuring everything.
I bet your friends and family just loved you.
Oh my gosh, have you seen the reading? So what was interesting is that the highest spikes I got were when electrical devices were charging. Right. So I used to sit with my laptop charging on my desk all the time because I wanted to be fully powered up, you know. And now I don't do that because when I put it near the charging cable, it just went off the chart.
Wow.
Same with phones. So the worst thing I think you can do is perhaps for disrupted sleep is to sleep with your phone charging next to you.
Which everyone does.
So my teens, I say, well, try and not sleep with your phone, as I say, get it away from you, just have an alarm clock. But if you are going to charge it away from you, charge it away from your body. And, you know, the further it is away, the less distance you get. And I know there are people who will say, oh, but there are no studies to show that, you know, EMFs are bad for you. Well, I'm afraid there are, and I list them in the book. And also, a lot of the studies that were started have been mysteriously abandoned.
Oh, funny that.
Which is weird, isn't it? Yeah. You think, I wonder why that would be. And actually, we don't know. When I had this reader, I would go around and it would suddenly say, oh, there's a cell tower. And I'm like, 5G cell? Well, I have no idea. Where is that? And they're hidden. You know, they're hidden in lampposts. They're hidden. They're disguised as trees. They're on top of buildings. And again, it's just increasing the overall load. And some people are more sensitive than others. I'm not saying that we all need to panic about this. It's just if you can charge your device away from you, if you can switch your Wi-Fi router off at night, you know, I know my teens hate it, but mine has a cutoff. It has a cutoff switch, 11 o'clock. That's it. It's gone. Mm. So, you know, that is just something that we do. And I've tracked my sleep with a sleep tracking app, and I've tracked the amount of deep sleep because that's the one that you really want. That's when your glymphatic system in the brain starts to do all its clearing out. And that's the one that's linked to an increased rise of early onset dementia and Alzheimer's. So you really want your brain to be clearing out all the waste material in this process of deep sleep. So that's not REM sleep or light sleep. It's our deep sleep. And when I plugged my phone in and had it charging next to me, which I did for my experiment, I got very little deep sleep. Mm. When it was away from me and switched off, my deep sleep improved. So, you know, that's just me. But I say in the book, actually, you know, research is important. It's important to look at the data to see which studies have been published. Obviously, a lot of them don't get published, but what studies are out there. But also be guided by how you feel. Mm. Research is one thing, but me-search is also really important because we're all different.
Yeah.
You'll react differently to something from me. Our epigenetics are different. Mm. You know, our circadian clock might be slightly different. So I think be guided by how you feel.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I was devastated to find out was my heated car seats.
Yes, you talked
really
about that.
Bad
I
news.
Love my heated
I know.
Car seat.
I'm really sorry. Maybe you can just put it on and then
I'll
5 minutes and then switch it off.
We live without them for many decades.
We
did not have heated car seats, so you know what we can.
And electric vehicles also really, really high, and hybrid cars. When you put your foot on the accelerator and that charge kicks in, the meter goes really high. So you know what are the long term effects? We don't yet know. We do know that there have been studies showing, you know, in petri dishes that cells don't thrive when they're exposed to this form of EMF. So I would say just try and limit it. Be aware. We're not going to throw away all our tech.
No.
But just be sensible and be aware. And will your mitochondria feel better for it? The chances are, on balance, yes, they will.
Yeah. You see, it's interesting because I come at this content via ancient wisdom. And that's always
but this is all ancestral. I was
exactly.
so thrilled to find that when I discovered mitochondria and all the longevity research that's going into that, all the leading researchers are now looking at mitochondria, which is something that we've never really talked about before. But the truisms are ancestral.
They are.
Because that's how we evolve.
Exactly.
So we're going back to that.
That's what I loved about reading it, because you're giving me all this sort of latest cutting edge research, because you've gone into the research and you're sort of presenting it with, well, this and this and this and this. And I'm sort of looking at it going, isn't it interesting that the first three chapters, because when I opened your book, I hadn't looked at any of your the interviews that you'd already done, I just opened it myself as a reader and just started to read it. And the first thing that I absolutely loved was the way you referred to the patriarchal dogmas of Western medicine. Like, wow, Liz, page one, I hasten to add.
Hey, I'm straight in there.
Page one, you said what I think and would never dare to say it. I literally hid behind you. Yeah, I agree. But I'm too scared to say it. Please don't be horrible to me. And then I think it's page three, you refer to the fact, as we said earlier, that you feel better now than ever before. I'm like, great. So the research is right there, because I would agree with that. And then the first three chapters, you are basically talking about elemental healing, which, as I said at the beginning, is how Chinese medicine approaches things. We have the five elements, of which you went straight in. And whilst light isn't an element per se, we would use that. That would be fire kind of in Chinese mm-hmm. medicine. It's basically the same information. And for me, when in doubt, I just go back to the time-tested wisdom and go, yes. What did the ancestors do? Because that's where we've come from. And no, ancestors didn't know about EMFs. They didn't. Okay, but
they didn't have them.
They didn't have them.
You know, the frequencies exactly. they had were the natural frequencies Precisely. Of the earth. The Schumann resonance, which is the hum of the earth. It's inaudible, but it's there. Yeah. And, you know, solfeggio frequencies from, I don't know, birds and other natural, you know, rustling of leaves and all of those things that we had, all the banging of, you know, of gongs and you know, those were the sounds that they were using and the vibration that they were exposed to, not the vibration, what they call the NN EMFs, the non-native EMFs that we now are surrounded by. Our lives are full of them in a way that they have never been. And when you combine that with things like our shortwave LED lighting, and our lack of daylight and our paranoia of the sun and all of these things, you think, my gosh, how disconnected have we become?
Yes. And one final thing I want to go into, actually, which you talk about, which is the lack of peace, which for me, I'm very ear sensitive. And I really do get I do get very stressed by this now, is that you talk about noise and you talk about how important it is for women to say no and to have breaks and to be able to relax during the course of the day and to tune into the earth's vibration by being in silence and by being in peace. And you've just referred to birds and leaf rustlings. And I agree with absolutely every single thing you've said. And yet the reality of modern life is we are so far removed from this. And it is now not actually normal to be able to go into a natural environment and have complete peace and quiet.
Silence.
It's not there. I mean, I go to Hyde Park every morning. They're doing building work. You can hear the traffic noise outside.
Yes.
I went to Bodrum on a holiday last year and it was an expensive hotel, and the amount of noise pollution in that hotel was so bad, I actually went round and took videos of everything just to make a point, and I sent it to them. They never answered, by the way. It's an absolute disgrace that there was just literally engine noises going on here, there and everywhere. There's building projects going on outside. There was no way that you could go into
rest and just...
Yeah, to rest into the beautiful silent frequencies of the natural world and how important it is to get there. So that's a tricky one, because the solution that the hotel manager gave me was to wear noise cancelling headphones.
I was going to say earplugs.
But that then removes you from the...
It disconnects you from everything.
And I talk about earplugs. Certainly the noise cancelling ones for the Apple phones are not your talking
about.
Well,
again, not Bluetooth.
No.
So I don't like the Bluetooth earbuds, because again, you're getting a wavelength that's literally, it's very close to your brain when you think about it. So let's just go back to old fashioned wired headphones, and all the cool kids have them.
Yes.
If you look on social media, you know, all the celebs
or
whatever.
Their parents can't be bothered to buy them yet another pair of 300 quid ear things that they then
lose. Or maybe they're just aware, you know, that... Hopefully. Yes, I mean, maybe you're less likely to lose them because they've got the long strings attached to them. So yes, I would go finding silence. So if you're in a space where you can't escape it, then I do think having some non-Bluetooth headphones and plugging into some of these solfeggio frequencies, you can find them. They're free of charge.
Yeah.
You know, all the music providers have them, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, you know, you can find them there. I list all the different frequencies.
Yeah.
So you can just kind of zone out, even if it's 5 minutes. Mm. You know, I know people say, oh, I don't have time to do that and sit and be quiet. To be honest, you don't have time not to do it.
Mm.
It's 5 minutes. Mm. And if you have to get up 5 minutes earlier, it's a seriously good investment for your mental health and your peace of mind. But yes, if you can, if you are somewhere quiet and you are able just to sit and disconnect everything and just be present. You know, as Eckhart Tolle says, the power of now, just literally be in this moment. It's incredibly fortifying, and it probably does more for you than an expensive hour-long spa treatment, because you're just coming back into yourself and just allowing your brain to process and be calm. And of course, breath work again comes into that
too. Yeah, and you talk about that. And I think what's so brilliant about this information is there's so much of it which is free, accessible.
It is.
It's a mindset. It's a 50%, or I always say 50% of the solution is understanding the problem, which you presented so clearly. And the problem is modernization. I mean, we've gone from, you know, the light bulb, industrialization, commercialization, and now the tech revolution, which is speeding things up. Even since I first started reading your books, it's gone a million miles since then. And we need to understand how to kind of accommodate that. So just to recap, because I know I could listen to you for hours, is that the reality is that look after your mitochondria and your mitochondria will look after you.
That's bottom line. If you understand the basics that your mitochondria need in your cells, they will regulate your circadian rhythm. They'll give you better sleep. They'll give you more energy. They'll look after your brain. They'll look after your hormones. They'll help you regulate your weight. They will just do so much. Mm-hmm. So the key is, what do our mitochondria need to thrive? And let's give them those inputs.
Yeah. And be aware that modern life tends to be rigged up into such a way that it's giving them the wrong things. So chances are, if you go into an environment outside of your own home that you've now sorted out, it's likely to be imbalanced. And therefore, it's important as part of your lifestyle routine to be aware of that and to just counterbalance that with simple things like hugging a tree, having plants around you, switching off your EMFs, making sure that you've got uplighting, taking some breaths, cleaning your water. We haven't really talked too much about food and supplements, but it's all in there in the book where you talk about your go-tos. Perhaps I could just finish, Liz, with just a question that I know has been asked you a lot as you've been talking about this book, which is, of course, the whole SPF skincare debate has raged around the launch of this book because you've dared to go out there against, in page one, we talk about the dogmas of patriarchal medicine, and probably about page eight, we've gone up against big pharma and big marketing and big brands and all of the money.
And the trillion-dollar beauty industry.
Yeah, and you've gone, do you know what? Don't worry about it. In fact, only use it at this time of day.
Yeah, exactly. It's not don't worry about it. Again, it's nuance.
Yes.
So it depends on your skin type.
Yes.
It depends on your colouring. It depends on time of year.
All of which you state.
Time of day, location, you know, so you can't just say yes or no. The bottom line is this. First thing in the morning, there is no UV.
Right.
Okay.
You get
A or B. Right. You get all that lovely red light, and we're going and buying LED face masks. You can get it free first thing in the morning.
Just get up and go.
Up and go out. You know, your eyes, don't have sunglasses, don't have anything on your skin, because your skin is really going to benefit from that red LED light and the near infrared light waves, because the skin actually has light receptors on it.
And when you say early morning, because in Chinese medicine, the definition of early morning changes season to season. Mm. So in the summer, early morning is 5 a.m.
Yes.
That's when you're getting that light. In the wintertime, it's more like 7 a.m.
Yeah. Well, so, it's all to do with sunrise.
Yes.
So it all relates to the sun. And you can download various apps, I've got them listed in the book, that are free for the most part, that tell you when the sun is coming up, what the UV index is, when you're able to make vitamin D, because you can't make it all the time.
No.
So when you've got that lovely soft light early in the morning and sunset, so actually sunset is also another good time to go out and get all this lovely red light, and that calms you down. That's producing the melatonin for sleep. It's reducing cortisol and all of that. So UVA is the first UV that we get, and that comes up, it depends on the time of year. I mean, it might be 9, 10, something like that. Then we get UVB. We don't get UVB normally till around 10, 11, depending. In the winter, we don't get any UVB at all.
Mm.
So why would you wear a UVB sunscreen? Because there is no UVB.
Mm.
And we don't get UVA. Tiny bits of UVA, maybe 3-5% that we would normally get in the summer. So it teeny, teeny amount, trivial. In fact, Professor Brian Diffie, who invented the whole UVA star rating system for skincare, he describes that, you know, the UVA in the winter is trivial. He said, why would you use a sun factor? So this whole notion that we have to get up 365 days of the year, whatever the weather, wherever we are, whatever our skin colour, and put on an SPF 50 is nonsense, because there is no sun to protect from. Why do you need a sun protection factor, SPF, if there is no sun?
Mm.
So that is number one, it doesn't make sense. Number two, you're blocking some of the important light signals that our skin needs. Now, Professor Richard Weller, who's the chair of clinical medical dermatology up in Scotland, he and his team discovered that UVA, rather than just being this dangerous ray, actually produces nitric oxide in the skin.
Yeah.
Nitric oxide, powerful anti-inflammatory, powerful antioxidant. We need it for vascular health. It helps prevent the risk of cardiovascular disease. So it got a really useful function.
Yeah.
So mitochondria also involved in producing nitric oxide. So that's probably evolutionary-wise why we need UVA, because we need it to make nitric oxide. Then we need a bit of UVB. UVB makes vitamin D. It's the only wavelength that makes vitamin D. So we're not getting any vitamin D first thing in the morning. You go out in the morning, you think, oh, that's good. I've got a bit of sun. I've got my vitamin D for the day. Wrong, you haven't. You'll only get it in the middle section of the day. Depends on the time of year, but on average, say between 11 and 3. Mm. That's when the rays are strongest. If you haven't adapted your skin, if you're indoors all day and you suddenly go out at midday and you're very fair, you're going to burn, you're going to damage your skin. So don't do that. You know, never damage the skin.
No.
Don't let your skin go red. Don't burn the skin. But if you can get out early and later in the day, and then maybe if you are out in the middle of the day and the sun is strong and your skin is very fair, you know, protect, use clothing, wear a hat, sit in the shade. Mm. You know, you'll still get the light signals coming into the eyes, but it's not directly coming in and glaring. So I'm not saying never use SPF. I'm just saying use it carefully when you need it.
Yeah. And don't get sucked into the kind of the fear propaganda, which is out there. And it is. I mean, personally, I use a UV parasol, which I love. I'm
and
obsessed.
You showed me, I was out with you one day and the sun came out and you put up your UV parasol. And I literally went straight online and bought UV parasols really cheaply. And I have one in my bag all the time.
And then it avoids, because you also talk a lot about, you know, there's a lot of toxins going into the body via the skin.
Well, that's the other issue. So the one is protecting from the sun and the potential damage. And remember, the sun is powerful, powerful energy source. It's neither friend nor foe. You know, you've got to really respect it.
Yeah.
But when we start putting synthetic chemicals on the skin, day after day after day, we are potentially disrupting the skin's microbiome.
Yeah.
And I interview clinicians on this. There's a wonderful consultant dermatologist, Dr. Véronique Bataille, and she's a skin cancer expert. And she's published many papers on melanoma. So she knows what she's talking about. Mm. She's at the sharp end of dermatology. And she doesn't believe that we should be using sunscreen all the time. She doesn't believe that that the sun is the only cause of melanoma. It's triggering a genetic predisposition. But her concern is that when we disrupt the skin's microbiome by layering on these synthetic chemicals in particular, we're stopping the signaling between the skin's microbiome and our immune system.
Mm.
So we have immune cells that are modulating this kind of immune response. And if we disrupt that, then we are potentially causing dysfunction down the line. She's also seeing a real rise in inflammatory skin issues like psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, perioral dermatitis. And she said it's overloading of skin ingredients. And if we don't need to use these things, then please don't.
Yeah.
So it's a long answer because it's complex and I go into it in great detail in the book and I quote lots of experts and
it's
cite
clear.
Lots of studies.
It's really clear.
I think
that's the thing to say is that we've had a very fascinating, thank you so much, and lengthy conversation about this. And we haven't even touched even probably more than a fifth of the actual content that you talk about. But the thing that I took away from this book was it was so easy to read. I could zip through it because it just kind of, it had a really lovely pace of like, tom, 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 and I could just hear you talking all the way through it, just going, it's okay, don't worry, this is what you need to do, this is why these people say what they're saying, and this is what the actual people who actually are experts and not necessarily paid by multi-billion pound organisations to take that opinion are saying, and therefore this is what you need to do. And so much of what you said, not perhaps the EMF stuff, because Chinese medicine in the ancient times didn't talk about it.
It didn't have it.
It didn't exist. Yeah. But so much of what you're saying just resonated with what I've learnt from all my study and also just from my own experiences of sort of now an aging woman to say this is just correct. It is sensible. It's really easy to understand. It's not overwhelming, even though you back everything up. You're not blinding me with all these kind of research terminologies where I sit there and go, oh my God, I'm really confused. It's not confusing. It's distilled and really easy to understand. So I would honestly, I know you're my friend, but genuinely, she says, proud to be your friend.
Thank you.
But I would honestly recommend everyone to read this book. It is for me, the go-to health book, like the Delia Smith How to Cook was literally my how to cook book. And it's the one I always go back to Delia when I get confused about my cheese souffle. I'm like, what does Delia say? It's like, what does Liz say? And you've given us the answers. So in a confusing world where every 5 minutes there seems to be a new piece of information contradicting where we've gone before, thank you for bringing this clarification to the market that talks to women, as you've also explained, have been very underrepresented by everything. And also, we are the ones, I think, who are hit the most with the whole anti-aging debate.
That needs to change. You know, it's pro-aging. Yeah. But also, you know, just to say, I have no skin in the game here. You know, I have no vested interest. And it's very interesting sometimes to see, you know, which areas come and attack you. And it's always follow the money. You know, what are you trying to sell me? What are you being paid to promote to me? What is the vested interest behind all this? Where's the agenda? I have no agenda. I'm a middle-aged woman, sort of slightly older age woman now, I guess. And I just want to age well. And I just want to share that information. That is pure and simple my agenda.
Yeah.
Nothing else than that.
You're serving all of us. So, I mean, it is, on behalf of the middle-aged woman, she says, appointing herself. Thank you, Liz. But that energy is all the way through the book. You can see the inspiration and the distillation and also the articulation of everything that your whole life has clearly brought you to this book.
Yeah, it has.
Having read every single one of the books that you've written.
Oh, bless you. Now, somebody said to me, how long did it take you to write? And I said, it's about 40 years.
Yeah, exactly. And yet it looks like you just sort of whipped it out. Like, it does, because the way you've written it, you make it look so easy. And I'm in the process of writing my second book at the moment. And literally, after I finished Put Your Book Down, the first thing I thought was, oh, my God, that was brilliant. And then I was like, oh, my God, my book's so useless.
I had to take a little bit of a breath.
No, but thank you.
It's great to see the two together because there's such synergy, isn't there? So
there
East
is.
And West, it's just great.
Female wisdom at its best. Liz, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.